Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, in a cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
How you doing?
I am doing great, man.
We are back. It is a Monday episode.
Mm-hmm.
New week of the Dune Minute.
New week.
It's going to be a week.
We left off last week on the precipice of one of the coolest moments and pivotal moments of the movie and the story.
The series as a whole, honestly.
The series as a whole, yeah. So, yeah, we got a whole heck of a lot to talk about.
My Dune encyclopedia got a lot of miles put on it this weekend.
Yes, it did. I don't really have anything like preamble to talk about. We've been talking like off mic for about an hour and a half now. So
yep.
I think we've exhausted all that.
We got most of that. Though the Braves did just start playing.
Ooh, are we going to do periodic Braves updates?
We could. Really date this podcast if we wanted to. But we did win yesterday, so.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, good. Well, two out of what, the first 10?
No, three.
Okay, sorry. We've won three out of the first 10, was it? 10 or 11? I don't know. Braves suck this season.
Yeah, it's rough. It's a building year.
Yeah, it's a building year, sure. That's the lie that Atlanteans tell themselves.
Look, at least, you know, not being a football fan, I don't have to be constantly reminded of 28-3, so.
That is very true.
Now that we've sufficiently pissed off all of the Falcons fans that might be listeners, let's dive into some Dune. Well,
I remember watching that Super Bowl, and I had to leave the party to go home because I think I had work that next day.
Yeah.
And fourth quarter, I was like, 28-3. I'm good. I'm just leaving now. By the time I got home, we had lost.
Leave it up to an Atlanta team to just fucking fumble at the end.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sports talk accomplished.
Done. I think this is the most sports talk I've ever had in my life is because of the Dune Minute podcast.
Who would have thunk?
Bringing people from all over. We got a different sport for today, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How are you going to craft the segue?
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Let us dive into minute 25 through 26 of Dune Part 2. Like I said earlier, we left on the precipice of Jessica being handed the water of life.
Yeah.
So this minute begins with the chameleon person handing her the decanter. Chameleon priest, sure.
Yeah.
Still love that mask. I tried to search to see if anyone had made a cosplay of that in particular. I couldn't find one. But damn, that's cool, and that would be such a great cosplay.
If we have any cosplay listeners, maybe that's some motivation for you.
That would be so cool.
Do something cool like that.
Yeah.
I've seen, speaking of cosplay, like, I've seen some really awesome cosplay of the Reverend Mother outfits.
Oh, yeah?
From the end scenes of this movie. People that do cosplay, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of talent that goes into that. If you are that, congratulations on just, like, all that crazy shit that you do.
Yeah. You know that I am a crafty person.
Yep.
You've
made a spoon for me. You've made watch bands for me. You've done all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I am currently learning how to use a sewing machine. That's been a weird... just unknown skill to me, and that shit is not easy.
No.
It is like I'm making a very simple like messenger bag right now, and it's going fine. And so when I look at the stuff that I'm doing and compare it to a like professional like cosplay. Yeah, stuff,
yeah,
blows my goddamn mind,
dude. It's insane.
Yeah, they're so talented.
Send us your Dune cosplays.
Oh yeah,
I want to see them.
So chameleon person.
Yeah, chameleon priest.
Chameleon priest.
Yep, person, priest, whatever.
They say some stuff here, and I really like it. I didn't write it down, though, so I'm assuming you did.
Zach. You know I did.
I know. That's why I don't bother writing down dialogue anymore.
You assume I did?
Yes.
Yes. So in Chakobsa, here's the water of life. It frees the soul. That was what we ended on
last week.
Last week.
Yep.
Thankfully, the minute is at least at the end of a sentence. We start this week with, if you drink, you shall die. And then we get a shot of Jessica's face and we really start to see the panic settle in here, which I have a lot of opinions on that, but let's go through the minute as it goes through. And then you and I have a lot to talk about it.
Sure.
Panic sets in on Jessica's face. And then we hear in Chakobsa, or we hear Chakobsa, we see in the subtitles, if you drink, you may see.
Yeah.
At which point, you know, Jessica is then told to drink.
Yeah.
And Jessica's like, what is it? And then Romalo has her one moment of like clarity, I guess we could call it.
Lucidity, maybe.
Yeah, because she's definitely out of it at this point. Like she's, it's the end. But in her last, one of her last acts, through the voice, commands Jessica to drink.
Yes.
And dude, I don't know what they did between part one and part two, but just like the thumper, the voice, at least with Romalo, just, it's beefier.
Sure.
It's juicier and
it's good.
It's so good.
Yeah. And you can see, you see it like hit Jessica.
It almost knocks her back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I took it as like, she's trying to resist it, but she's not doing a great job.
No, no. Romalo is definitely a stronger will than Jessica.
Yep. So the decanter is lifted and the blue water of life is poured into Jessica's mouth.
Not a lot.
Not a lot, just a little bit. And everyone's kind of like looking on in anticipation. Like, what's about to happen? In the background, some we get the heart. We hear heartbeats.
Yep.
Presumably Jessica's.
Well, and Alia's.
Okay, yes. And Jessica starts to like, it says on screen choking, but she's like convulsing.
She's convulsing. Her eyes are bulging out of her head.
Yeah.
She starts like shaking hardcore. And I love that all of Romalo's acolytes are just looking at her like, yeah,
this is what's supposed to happen. Yeah. This is what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. There's no shock on our face.
No, no, there's not at all. So she's going through it, man. Like, you know, she collapses and she's like,
she's like writhing on the floor.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's seizing up basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get a little, jump from the chanting and wailing that goes on in the background here?
I wouldn't say a jump, but
I just, okay. Again, I haven't watched this movie in a long time. I was not expecting it. So when it just came out with that, kind of like wailing, I was like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck was that? When we get a shot of Romalo's face, I took it as she looks excited. Like,
yeah,
she's like having a fucking blast watching all this.
Well, I think it's, I mean, a little bit of headcanon here, but I feel like she's beginning to feel the transition on Jessica's end.
Yeah.
And watching her transmute this poison. But yeah, Jessica's on the ground, you know, writhing. And we talked a little bit about it last week about how the set designers were kind enough to make the floor out of rubber. I'm sure Rebecca Ferguson was very appreciative of that when she then slams her body on the floor and begins writhing around in this moment here.
Yeah. Then we get something new. Right after this.
Yeah.
And this is be something that we talk about over the course of the first couple of episodes this week. We're introduced to an internal POV of Jessica.
And POV poison.
Yeah, exactly. And it's this like swirling blue liquid, which did Prophecy do this as well? Okay. They did the same thing. Okay.
Prophecy cool. took from part two.
Yeah.
Prophecy's was a lighter blue. This is more of like a, I don't want to call it a navy. I don't want to call it a royal, but it's definitely like a darker blue. And the Art and Soul mentions nothing about how this shot was processed, so I can only guess. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna just go out on a guess based on what I've seen from other like shots that were done, that they probably used like a really heavy ink and water, or maybe like a oil suspension with ink or whatever. But
if you've ever,
it made... definitely seems a lot thicker in Dune Part Two than it did in Prophecy. It felt a little more watery over there, or it looked a little more watery over there.
Okay.
Because I went back and I watched to compare how they did it.
Cool.
Seemed like the same technique, but whatever they did here, the color was more dark.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we've all made that like water bottle half with water, half with like vegetable oil.
Yeah.
And that's like exactly
a third grade science experiment, right, where you're learning about densities.
Yep. That's exactly what it reminded me of doing that. I mean, the other, I guess the alternative answer is that this is all like CG done, and which could be.
Could be, but also like, I feel like that's an easy enough practical.
Sure.
That they could have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Regardless, looks really cool. Yep. I'm enjoying it. We'll get to see it a few more times.
Yeah, because we only get a very quick shot of that for like a couple seconds.
No, not even. It's like a second, maybe.
Yeah, and then we cut back on a wider shot of Jessica still on the ground, lying on her side, and we see Romalo and her acolytes sitting behind Jessica, and that's where our minute ends there.
Right.
But this episode of the podcast does not end.
Because I have book notes, and I'm assuming you have some notes too.
I have book notes, I have encyclopedia notes, I have Art and Soul notes. I've got so many notes.
Well, let's trade off. You did the intro, so you go first.
All right. I'm going to start with Art and Soul because Art and Soul takes this pretty quickly.
Okay.
Art and Soul talks about how The Exorcist was actually the movie The Exorcist was a big motivating factor in storyboarding this scene. They wanted a lot of the storytelling to be done through action rather than words, and I think they do a really good job.
Yeah,
I think Rebecca Ferguson channels a little bit of Exorcist energy into this role and everything.
All it's missing is the pea soup.
Yeah, Rebecca Ferguson, to quote Art and Soul of Dune, did just that, delivering the scene as though being possessed and fighting with all of her Bene Gesserit abilities against the poison coursing through her veins.
Yep.
So I think it's really cool when filmmakers, you know, honor the classics and honor those, you know, major moments in film with their own kind of interpretation of these moments. And, you know, seeing that The Exorcist was important to Denis enough to, you know, have his own take on it, essentially. Really cool. Love that. So, yeah, that's really all Art and Soul has to add from here, other than the things that we talked about last week, where how this was filmed in a 3'6" tall, you know, little narrow spot in the sound stages that they had on Budapest. And
okay,
you know, the film crew was in that same small 3'6" spot. So it's not like they're just sitting outside standing at full height. So,
all right.
That is Art and Soul's contribution to this entire week, actually.
Okay.
So,
Well, we will definitely fill up the void left of Art and Soul with some book notes, because we got a lot of them.
Yep. This definitely does happen in the books.
Sort of.
Differently.
Yeah. So let me set the scene for what we are, or where we are in the books. So PB&J have reached the siege, and they, in the books, we get the passage from Hera that I mentioned last week, And then we immediately cut over to this this chapter, the, you know, Jessica taking the water of life. It is a whole chapter in the book. We learn from Hera that they are leaving the siege. The Fremen need to get out of there because the Harkonnens are closing in on them.
Sure.
So they are getting, just, you know, they're splitting, they're going south.
We're done with this.
Yeah. Reverend Romalo, being old as hell, she's not going to survive a trip like that. So they need to pass on the spiritual torch to a new Reverend Mother.
Correct.
They want Jessica to be this Reverend Mother. But as a backup, Chani is promoted to Sayadina.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a very different Chani than we have in the movies.
And we talked about this a bit last week as well. But I think we came to the conclusion that part of the reason why there are the two very different Chani's is because they needed to have a movie story to tell rather than the book story,
mm-hmm.
with Paul not immediately just being like, oh yeah, cool, you're kind of one of us now.
Yeah, exactly. Some,
he,
yeah,
he
some
has separation. To earn it in the movie, yep. differently than he earns it in the books.
Correct. Now, Jess or Chani is the person who's leading this ceremony with this Jessica, that Jessica's going through.
Yeah.
Romalo
Chani is chameleon priest.
Yeah, I guess in a sense, yeah. Romalo's there. She has a couple more lines in the book than she does in the movie. Still a relatively minor part, though. Now, when the decanter bit is not something, that's a movie creation.
Mm-hmm.
In the books, what we are told is that they bring out these like two relatively large like water bags.
Jugs.
Yeah, it's like they're like skin sacks of water.
Yeah. They're Canadian milk gallon.
Yeah, exactly.
Milk bags.
They said they're about a little bit larger than a human head each. So that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
Jessica can smell the cinnamon that's coming off of these. So she knows there's, you know, something to do with the spice in it. And she wonders if it's spice liquor, because the last time that she had like the spice smell combined with liquid was when Duncan Idaho gets, you know, blasted off his gourd earlier in the book, and, you know, super drunk on spice liquor.
Hell yeah.
So we get another Duncan mention here in the book. And I, in my notes, I put Drunken Idaho, which I thought was kind of fun.
I feel like we made that joke.
I'm sure we did.
Yeah.
So Jessica goes to take her, you know, small little sip of the water. And Chani's having none of that. She's like, no, you don't take a small sip. And she's
chug.
Well, chug. She does. So she has Jessica has like the tube in her mouth to take a sip.
Yeah.
And then Chani just squeezes the bag and forces her to take like a huge gulp of the stuff.
Did your brothers ever do that to you? If you had like one of those Gatorade squeeze bottles like the nipple and they just go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a mean prank, but it's, I guess, effective here.
I used to do that with my cousins all the fucking time to each other, like with Capri Suns and stuff. We would just reach over and grab the other person's and squeeze the shit out of it.
Yeah, we've all done that. But she does this a couple of times throughout the whole ordeal. So she is forcing Jessica to ingest a large amount of this poison.
Yeah.
Or water of life.
Well, I mean, we'll call it what it is. It is a poison.
Yes, so. It very much is a poison. So I have a little bit of a book, or I have a little passage from the book that I want to read. This is after Chani has squeezed the large amount of poison into Jessica's mouth, and it's really starting to take effect on her.
Okay.
So, whirling silence settled around Jessica. Every fiber of her body accepted the fact that something profound had happened to it. She felt that she was a conscious mote. And that's spelled M-O-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller than any subatomic particle, yet capable of motion and sensing her surroundings. Like an abrupt revelation, the curtains whipped away. She realized that she had become aware of a psychokinesthetic extension of herself. She was the mote, yet not the mote.
Schrodinger's mote.
Yeah, Schrodinger's mote, sure. So, Something I want to keep in the forefront of my mind is when this book was written.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 60s, man.
Hell yeah, dude.
And I don't know if we have ever talked about this, but if Frank Herbert ever had a history with psychedelic drugs.
I'm pretty sure he did either acid or mushrooms when he was before he went on that helicopter ride over the dunes.
Okay.
Like I could be very wrong on that, but I remember reading somewhere something about how Frank had psychedelic intervention, I guess.
Okay.
When he was, you know, going through the process of making this series.
Okay. Well, that would make sense because this passage, and I'm going to talk about this for the rest of the week, heavily influenced on taking psychedelic drugs.
Yeah.
I have done that myself a few times, and it is, this resonated with me. So it is, this is like a weird LSD trip that she's about to go on. And just the words that he uses, psychokinesthetic extension.
Yeah.
Okay. First off, that's made up. He just made that word
fucking
up.
Nerd.
Yeah. But it makes sense, I guess, when you put it in context of the Bene Gesserit and just how their bodies they're so in tune with their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So psychokinesthetic extension of herself weirdly makes sense in this context. I also love the idea that she is a
I feel like that's just another way of saying out of body experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We're all motes in the end, right?
What is everything?
Yeah. She was a mote, but yet she was not the mote, John. And for those who don't know, a mote is just a very, very small particle. I don't think that word gets used a lot anymore.
I mean, it's used a lot in my world, but that's just because it's a specific item in a specific game that I play. So
some Destiny shit?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, excuse me.
It's not like my everyday fucking like vocabulary, but
so one thing that I guess the next thing that Jessica encounters is that she feels the passage of time stop, which again, this is very much a hallucinogenic drug trip.
It is very inspired, shall say.
So she notices that time has seemed to stop. She sees dust particles above Chani's head, just frozen and suspended there. Mm-hmm. And she realizes that her personal time was suspended to save her life. This is her Bene Gesserit training coming into play here. It has stopped her bodily functions to stop the poison from spreading around her body and giving her the time to react and to, as we'll come to see tomorrow, really just transmute this poison and save her life. So that's where we are right now. And that's where I'll stop the book notes. I got a whole heck of a lot more to say tomorrow. So let's continue this tomorrow. And we will talk about the rest of her trip because we get some fun stuff coming up.
Yep. And tomorrow we'll definitely have more transmutation and stuff to talk about as well because we will see more of that actually in action. We only just got the briefest tease, I would say, at the end of this minute. So I think we'll save the rest of that meat for that episode.
Cool. Let's do it.
Alrighty. Well, as always, you can find us online on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch that way. We'll see you tomorrow for a Tuesday episode of the Dune Minute.
All right. See you then.